Well, we as a group want to have a growth culture, a culture of growth in this place. And that culture of growth means a couple of things. It means that individually, each of us is going to grow stronger in God. And it also means that we're going to grow beyond ourselves, and we're going to reach out to those people that are around us so that we can bring more and more people to come to know God. That's the honor of being a Christian. Now, that honor, if you're going to have that kind of growth, demands a number of things from us. In the first place, it demands that we examine ourselves. And we talked about how we can create our own questionnaire that we can use to examine ourselves and the questions that we put on it. It might be, what do I know that I didn't know 25 years ago? What have I done that I wasn't doing 25 years ago? There are a lot of questions that individually we might put on our self-examination form. But I suggest that you write down the questions that are important to you and that you actually answer those questions and put those questions aside, go back to it in another month. Answer those questions again. That's the way we're going to grow. We need to be constantly talking about growth. But once we've done the self-examination, once we've looked at ourselves, the question is, can just one person really make a difference in the growth of this group? Can one person really impact what's going on? Would somebody like to read James 5, beginning at verse 17 and read down through verse 20? This is a part of the Old Testament that we read last month, as we were chronologically reading through the Old Testament. Can somebody read James 5, beginning at verse 17?
Elijah was a man with a nature like ours. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain. It did not rain on the earth for 3 years and 6 months. Then he prayed again, and the sky poured rain, and the earth produced its fruit. My brethren, if any among you strays from the truth and one turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save his soul from death and suffer a multitude of sins.
Just one person, Elijah. Now, we understand that there were other people in Israel. And Elijah had to confront that. Remember when he went out and he was in the cave, or Elisha was in the cave, and he said, "Kill me. I'm the only one that's left." Well, he wasn't, right? God still had 7,000 people that hadn't bowed the knee to Baal. But at that point, it looked like to the prophet, he was the only one, and he's confronted Ahab, the most powerful individual in the kingdom at that time. His wife Jezebel, just as wicked as she could be. What do you think was going through his mind as he said, "It will not rain"? Anybody?
He must have been confident that it certainly wouldn't.
That's true. Confident in God. Okay. Clearly, the prophet can't withhold rain. That's not within his power. Okay? He can't of himself stop the rain. But if he petitions God, it can happen. So it's just one man. Now, you remember, he's faced down all the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. One man, apparently. But he made a difference. And we can make a difference too. Now, the truth of the matter is that there's only one person like you and me in the whole world. There's only one person who has the network of friends that I have, who has the life experiences that I have, who has done all of the studying that I have. There's only one me. I am special as far as God is concerned. And God knows what I can do. So he distributes talents based on how we can use them. Let's read the parable. Everybody familiar with the parable of the man who received 10 talents, the man who received 5, the man who received 1? Okay, let's just read Matthew 25. And let's begin in verse 14. Long reading to read the whole parable. It goes pretty quickly because a lot of those verses are pretty short. But can we get somebody to read Matthew 25, beginning in verse 14?
For it is just like a man about to go on a journey. He called his own slaves and entrusted his possession to them. One he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. Immediately, the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with him, and he gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away, and he dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with him. The one who had received 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Also, the one who had received 2 talents came up and said, Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I've gained 2 more talents. And his master said to him, well done, you good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. The one also who had received the 1 talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. But his master answered and said to him, you wicked, lazy slave, you knew that I reaped where I did not sow, and gathered where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival, I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from this guy and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given. He will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
So what do you see there? What do those talents represent? A talent was a sum of money. It was a weight of some precious metal. A talent. Now, we don't use the word talent that way today, right? We think of talent as ability. But what did these talents represent?
Oh, God has given us the ability of doing different things. Each and every one of us are different. He's given us talents of some kind.
Okay.
I remember a young man who was Down syndrome, really couldn't speak. But he went around and knocked on the door of everybody's house in his neighborhood and did what he could for them. And this young man passed away. And I don't think they could count the number of people that came to his funeral to remember. He used what talent he had. And I think that's what the Lord expects us to do. Use what talents he's given.
So when you're using talents, you're talking, that's almost the same as ability.
That's right.
Right. And the talent was the kind of the opportunity that God gave him based on his ability. Good point, Bill.
Well, and the story is talking about a weight of money.
Yeah, right.
But because of this and the other story about the talents, did that change the meaning from the way we use the word today?
No, I have no idea. I don't know the etymology of that word. On what basis were the talents given?
To see what they do with them. To try them in the trial.
Okay, but that's a purpose. What was the? I think I heard Bob say it.
Ability.
Yeah, they were given the talent, the sum of money based on ability. Yeah.
The money isn't how they increase the talents. It's their ability to apply themselves that increased the talents. And it said immediately. In fact, all of them did something immediately. Even the guy who buried it, because even though he didn't understand, he understood God, but he didn't understand the love of God, he didn't understand the power of God. He didn't know how to walk with God. And so he feared God.
Good point. God expects us, if this parable, if I understand this parable correctly, God expects us to use the ability that we have in the best possible way. Yeah, Bob?
By the way, whether it's money or talent, it's capital.
Yeah, capital or resources.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good way to put it. It's the resources. And every one of us has resources. Some have a lot. Some don't have much. But God expects us to use the resources that we have. It is not God's expectation that he would give us resources and then we would simply, take care of it, take care of them, not throw them away. That's not what God gives us ability to do. Yeah, Carol.
If
you speak, learn a foreign language, and you don't practice it and speak it, you basically lose the majority of what you have. So you need to be using the talents that God gave you. And okay, maybe you're a little odd or a little quirky, but you know, that's what God gave to you, and you just do the best you can.
That's right.
And when you quit doing something, then you say, okay, I need to start it up again, then you have to just start it up again.
That's right. And sorry, I think the battery died in the microphone. Does it sound like we're back on? Now we're good? Nope, still not good. Let me turn it off. Turn it on. How's it doing now? Okay. So God expects us to use our talents. And if you don't use it, you'll lose it. And God gives us abilities. Those abilities come from God. Now, I know, just like everybody else does, that it's harder to make a difference when it feels like you're by yourself. Right? It's harder to make a difference when it feels like you're by yourself. And I think the story of David is a really good way to illustrate that. Let's read 1 Samuel 17. It's a long reading. But can I get somebody to read 1 Samuel 17? Yes, all of 1 Samuel 17.
The alone good way to hold out. Then, now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Sophah, which belongs to Judah, and they camped between Sophah and Azekah in Ebeth-Zaman. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah, and drew up the battle array to encounter the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with the valley between them. Then a champion came out from the army of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out and draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine, and you are servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us." Again, the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of the Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons. And Jesse was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years among men. The 3 older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to the battle, and the names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, the 2nd Abinadab, and the 3rd Shema. David was the youngest son. Now the 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. The Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand. Then Jesse said to David his son, take now for your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to your brothers. Bring also these 10 cuts of cheese to the commander of their 1,000 and look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them. For Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting the Philistines. So David arose early in the morning and left the flock of keeper and took the supplies and went as Jesse had commanded him. He came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array shouting a war cry. Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. Then David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. As he was walking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. When all the men of Israel saw the men, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. The men of Israel said, have you seen this man who's coming up? Surely he's coming up to defy Israel, and it will be that the king will enrich the man who killed him with great riches, and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who killed this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? The people answered him according to this word, and saying, thus would be done for the man who killed him. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger burned against David. He said, why did you come down? And with whom have you left the few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see this battle. But David said, what have I done now? Was it not just a question? Then he turned away from him to another and said the same thing, and the people answered the same as before. When the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he said for him. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine and fight with him. You are but a youth who's been a warrior from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued him from his mouth. And when he rose up against him, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and an uncircumcised Philistine will be just like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear of the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and may the Lord be with you. Then Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with armor. David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. So David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. And David took them off. He took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag which he had, even in his pouch, and his sling was with his hand. And he approached the Philistine. Then the Philistine came on and approached David with a shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog? Would you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his God. The Philistine also said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, a spear, a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you down and remove your head from you. I will give the dead body of the army of the Philistines to this day, the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David, that David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag and took from it a stone and slung it. And it struck the Philistine on his forehead, and the stone sank into his forehead, so that he fell on his face to the ground. Thus, David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and took over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of his sheath and killed him, cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. The men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the slain Philistine lay along the road to Shechem, even to Gath and Ekron. Sons of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and plundered their camps. Then David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his weapon in his tent. Now when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose young son is this man?" And Abner said, "By your life, O king, I do not know." King said, "You inquire whose son the youth is." So when David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the Philistine's head in his hand. Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answered and said, "I am the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite."
So you got three things going on here. As I see it, David has a talent or ability. David's motivation, and then David's behavior. So let's talk about those three things. Where did David's talent come from?
God.
Okay. It wasn't the sword. So Saul gives him the sword, and I get the impression it was pretty ill-fitting because it was built for someone that was older and probably had a man-shaped body instead of a boy-shaped body. So David says, that's not me. That's not how I do things. I've got my sling and I've got my staff. That was the ability that he had. And it came from God. And we've seen that already. What about his motivation?
I think it's also important to point out that he had tested and tried his ability. He had used it. So he had cultivated it and worked it.
Okay. Good point. That's why a lot of programs fail. A lot of plans fail because somebody says, "Hey, this is how I do things. This is how you ought to do things." And that's not the case. And they fail largely because that's not us. Tim teaches in a very specific way. I teach in a way that's very different than the way that Kim teaches. I can't teach the way Kim does. And she doesn't like the way I teach. She can't teach the way I do. That's not to say that one is better than the other. But that's the reason that a lot of things fail. Even though it works for somebody else, we try to do it and it won't work for us. Let me get Bill. He had his hand up first.
David was young and innocent enough to trust in God. He hadn't developed the fear of the enemy that his brothers had, or the other men had.
That's a sad commentary when we say David was young and trusted in God. That is a terrible commentary. The more years we have with God, the more we ought to trust him. But I agree with you. That's generally the way it works. Yeah, Carol.
I think his motivation was his faith in God. I think he walked with God the whole time he was out there with the sheep and he communed with God. And when he went after the bear and the lion, he knew God was with him. These men were devaluing God. And he could not tolerate that.
Okay.
And so his motivation was to hold up the honor of his God. And I'm not so sure it was because he wasn't fearful. He wasn't fearful because he understood God and how God had already shaped his life. So although he was young,
okay,
God had already walked with him the whole time.
Now, David is in a situation where he has to go it alone. Do you think it was harder for David to go it alone than it would have been if somebody else in the army had said, David, I'll go with you?
His own brother mocked him.
Okay, that's a second kind of thing. Not only did nobody go with him, they actively worked against him.
He trusted God, and nobody else would go just because Goliath was so huge. Nobody would go up against him, and he thought that was his brothers and were cowards, basically.
Okay.
And they should have done the job themselves, but he knew that he could because he used what talent he had and knowledge that God gave him, and that was why he was able to do that.
You know what I find really interesting? David didn't berate the people that wouldn't go with him.
Nope.
He just went. And I fear that it's easy for us to think nobody's doing anything. And to lose our motivation because nobody's doing anything. Okay, nobody's doing anything. That doesn't matter. Yeah, Bill, or Bob, sorry.
Well, I find it interesting that when David comes onto the scene, he says in verse 26, when David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the approach from Israel?
Yeah.
So he's interested in a reward, too, or he wouldn't have asked that question.
Oh, that's true.
Whatever.
That's true. He's
motivating, and he's very confident in himself. He calls the Philistine an uncircumcised Philistine.
Yeah. Well, if you read some translations, he calls them an uncircumcised dog.
Yeah.
And that's the way they felt about the Philistines. There's no question about that. Whether it was right or wrong for him to feel that way, that's not our purpose tonight. But David gets there. Nobody's doing anything. They're actively working against him. That's the second thing. And David's motivation is not impacted by that. Yeah, Susie.
I'm sorry. Was it
that
for me?
Oh, one of you had their hand up.
I wonder if a little bit of playing into that comes from being young and thinking you can conquer anything. I've got a granddaughter that thinks she can do anything. She sets her mind to, she can do it, you know. And sometimes if I say, well, you know, let's get Randy to help you or something, she'll, I don't need Randy, I can do that myself, you know. And I think when we're younger, we have more confidence in our abilities than we do when we get older.
Okay. Again, I feel like the older you get, the more confident you ought to be.
You ought to be, but I don't know about
that. Okay, but then I don't think it always works that way. I absolutely agree with you. Yeah. That's what God expects. And he went out alone. Nobody went with him. Even Goliath, as big as he was, and as mean as he was, and as impressive as he was, he had his armor bearer with him. Okay. David went alone. Yeah, Carol.
Because God was with him.
Okay. You're right. God is with him. That's undeniable. I shouldn't have said he went alone. But when he went out there, nobody was behind him. Okay. Yeah, Bill.
When David was out in the field and he killed the lion and the bear, these were wild animals with no brain and no thinking power. And he said, who is this? Who are you to come out against the armies of the living God? You are no better than the bear or the lion. And he had faith. He had faith. He probably had a lot of emotions and hormones too, but he was ready to go to the battle whether he lived or died in the name of God.
Okay. If I'm just suggesting, if we're going to have a culture of growth, we have to start thinking like David did. If nobody goes with us, it doesn't matter. And I'm not going to waste my time bemoaning the fact that nobody went with me. My job is to do it. Okay?
My son always tells me, Mom, why do you try to fix everybody? And I said, because they need help and nobody else seems to want to help. So I'm going to try. I might fail, but I'm going to try. So that's just me, not anybody else maybe.
Well, we're wanting this culture of growth, and it has to be like you're saying. Nobody's going to do it with me. I don't care, is what God says. God says, you do it. And don't worry that other people aren't getting in line behind you. Okay? Boy, we ran out of time, but you get the last comment, Carol.
Feel like David did, that God said this needs to be done, that we can do what we've decided to do, whether anybody else goes with us.
Good way to end this discussion. Okay?